Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the January 14 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find all of our agricultural programming online on demand at willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Let's start with our normal question as usual, and we'll do this with you, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing. What are the things we ought to discuss for the day?
Well, I guess I think it's time to kind of start looking at, you know, how am I going to approach this marketing for 2016 with the margin, tight margin situation that we have and the, you know, the economic environment we have, and just kind of maybe toss around some ideas on how to look at this thing going in the next few months here.
Ellen Dearden of Ag Review.
I feel like it's a broken record, but I think we need to definitely talk about the U.S. dollar and why the Fed seems very content to leave the dollar very strong.
And Mike Zuzulo.
I think probably intertwining those two things, Todd, is whether the USDA report did us any good with the idea that maybe we can see a relief rally as we set up these February crop insurance prices for the base.
All right. Well, let's go through some of the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture as they were released earlier this week. The WASD figures ended up like this, and they sort of encompass everything if you read through them all. Corn yield now at 168.4, total production at 13.601 billion bushels. We end up with a carryout of 1.802 for an average cash price on the marketing year, according to USDA, this month of $3.60. Soybeans, 48 bushel to the acre. A soybean figure for the yield, production at 3.93 billion bushels, carryout at 440 million, and they put the cash price at the midpoint at $8.80, wheat futures cash price at $5, actually that's the cash price, and the carryout there at 941 on a production of 2,052, average yield at 43.6. Of course, those numbers we've had for quite some time. So those numbers, what do you think of them? And how do they set us up, do you believe, Mike Zuzulo?
I do think on net, Todd, the supply reduction in terms of yield for U.S. stocks was an important feature. It definitely, I think, based upon talking to people after the report came out in Chicago and talking to others in the profession, the trade was, I think, definitely wanting to see or expecting to see a larger supply come out of the U.S. production. And so we didn't get that in corn and beans. And I think that is very supportive, especially to the cash market as we go through this next 30 to 45 days. We cleared one major hurdle for the corn, and it's been taken away now, and that's the soybeans. That heavy building U.S. and global soybean stock sentiment is no longer as much a dominant threat or pressure to the corn, I don't think, and I think that's going to be very helpful to give us a potential weather rally as we get into this February base price time period. And just one quick note on the supply demand for world soybeans, USDA kept Brazil unchanged at 100 million metric tons, even though their ag attaché is below that, closer to 98. And even with that, the USDA got within about 2 million metric tons from last year's carryover. And if you go to the oil seeds category, we're now actually in global oil seeds below where we were even in 2014-2015 marketing year. So instead of the beans being the leader, one of the leaders to the downside, I don't think it's that at all anymore, and it could be the leader to the upside. We did not clear the other major hurdle, and that was the wheat, but I can get into that later.
Yeah, so on the global stocks, and I think this is where you were pointing to in particular on corn, soybeans, and a bit on the wheat, Mike. We were down, 115 million bushels globally for corn, soybeans 121 million bushels, and for wheat, just 80 million bushels, but that was a bit higher than the previous month. And if you want to see those in the million bushels as opposed to in the million metric tons, you can do that on our website at willag.org. Just look in the USDA reports. I've got it set up so that it converts automatically the million metric tons into actually into bushels. So it's sometimes easier for people to get a handle on that. Those are actually pretty good changes. And as you suggested, Mike, they do change, I guess, as you're saying, the feeling that the soybeans will just lay on the marketplace over the coming months. Bill Mayer, what does that tell us about marketing of old crop corn and or soybeans at this time, if anything?
Well, I think it kind of depends on where you're at. But one of the things that I thought really kind of stuck out in the USDA report was the regionality of the corn situation, and they really kind of brought down the eastern states pretty dramatically, really, on the corn yields and that, and did increase the western states some. Looking at the stocks, we've got about 400, if I looked at Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio, and we've got about 400 million bushels less corn on hand in those states than we did a year ago, and we've got about the same about in Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska, more than we had a year ago. Our total stocks of corn as of December 1st was about the same as they were last year. So I think we still kind of have that problem as we look out here on, you know, how do we get the corn, which is heavily located in the west, over to the eastern belt where we need it. And so that brings me to the answer to your question. I think in the east here, the eastern part of the belt, we've still got very good basis levels. I think that's the positive thing that the farmer can look at out here, that he can really either own futures or call options or use a basis contract to generate cash. And it really isn't a huge deal whether he has his ownership in the futures market or in the cash market right now on the corn side of things. So I think you have to involve that into your plan on your old crop corn by getting the basis set and using some strategy maybe to protect your downside.
Exactly. How would that happen?
Just a simple one would be to go in and take the basis contract, take some kind of a put underneath. Another one that we've looked at this week is to get your basis contract on. If you want to have some upside potential, there's some mini max type contracts out here where a guy can, you know, have a maximum upside potential of 410 on July corn. That, you know, you're probably going to have your corn gone at 410 if it would get there anyhow. So I think some of those tools like that that a person can use will allow you to go ahead and get cash generated from the crop, but give you some potential still in case the market does go higher.
Ellen Dearden, prior to the end of the last year, and I think this may have been done over a text or an email, we may have talked about it on the air as well, as it relates to the eastern and western corn belt and the movement of corn. You had suggested that corn was coming out of middle of Iowa and landing in the middle of Illinois. Is that still the case?
Yes, it is. And these come in as train loads. And other than weather disruptions, that's still been a pretty prevalent movement. I'd like to just go back and we can expound on that, but the commercial, really, from a cash standpoint, has been comfortable with 2 weeks book, very short-term needs bought, and felt okay about that. I think now, as the spreads look like we're losing some of this carrying charge, may kind of step up their buying plans a little more in here, both eastern and western corn belt.
And this is reflected in basis as well?
Yes, the basis in the eastern corn belt is extremely hot. I noticed that Columbus, Ohio processors went to 35 over the March on corn today, Fort Wayne, Indiana looks like 22, maybe 24 over. So these are extremely strong, particularly when you see guys in the Omaha area at, 10 under.
All right. So, well, but they're only 10 under in Omaha is the point, I suppose.
That is a strong basis for them. Yep. But I'm seeing feedlots, instead of buying a week's needs, buying 2 weeks, 3 weeks out at this stage of the game.
Yeah, so they're buying a little further out. And what does, Ellen, this really tell you about the marketplace? They're a little hand to mouth at this point. Is that because they believe farmers have enough grain and will let it go a little at a time? And they're not too worried about it, meaning they think it's in weak hands?
I think they do believe it's in weak hands. Farmers are considered weak hands. But I also think that commercials have been fed the line that farmers all are going to need money over the next 30, 60 days. And so they're just waiting for the market to come to them. And I think the only place they're tightening basis, when I look at things, is pretty much on the next, week, 2 week, 3 weeks time.
Hey, Mike, I was looking at a basis chart for a local grain elevator today in central Illinois for soybeans on new crop, or it was on new crop. So it was something like 40 under through August, and then 20 under through from August until now, and now a dime under at this point. Those, and the jumps are just stair steps.
Right, and a lot of those can be traced back to the idea in the trade that they priced in now, both the cash and the futures, that Brazil and Argentina, especially Argentina, are going to have a lot more beans to compete with us for a longer period of time because of this change in the export tax. I'm very leery of that, especially given that the weather pattern in center west Brazil has not helped a lot of the situation yet, from what I'm picking up. And there's also now a potential, an increasing potential, there could be a ridge starting to form at just the wrong time in Argentina's main grain belt, which would include the Buenos Aires province. And I think thirdly, Todd, as you see their currencies decline, their inflation goes up, and they need more domestic stockpiles and supplies to keep the inflation from going higher. It's what happened to Russia a year ago with the wheat, where they started to sell and export wheat. Their inflation went sharply higher because they were simply letting go of supplies, and their bread prices and wheat prices were going up because they were pulling down stocks. It was a favorable export market, but in that inflation environment, it really hurt the consumer. And Brazil and Argentina are in a tough enough shape politically, and with their people, especially Brazil, with the Summer Olympics coming up in Rio de Janeiro, that's right around the corner. It could be a potential hotbed of political activity down there. So I am skeptical that they'll see a lot of exports come out of Argentina and Brazil. So I think you bring up a huge point. Watch those basis levels for those time periods, because the early crop bean harvest basis may improve pretty nicely.
I made note, Mike, that you mentioned earlier the USDA numbers for Brazil and Argentina. However, CONAB was at 102, and they remained there. I think they may have even increased slightly. USDA at 100 million metric tons for Brazil. They remained there. And then just this week, the Rosario Grain Exchange out of Argentina said, we're going to have a bigger crop than we thought, at least for corn, at 23.8 million tons. And that's up from 20.2 million tons. You're telling me that the weather forecast is hot and dry, and I understand that. And it looks like that's being built into the marketplace to some extent. So the question oftentimes in these dry conditions, are there opportunities that you have to take advantage of sooner rather than later? Or are you really feeling that this is having a longer-term impact, weather that is, on the potential crop size out of South America?
Yeah, these are huge points. I'm glad you brought them up, Todd, because when you do have a political situation with high inflation rates, you're not going to want to talk about yields or production potential going down. I'm not saying the governments of those two countries are doing that. I will say, though, and reiterate that the own USDA ag attaché brought his production down last week before this week's report for Brazil, down to either, I think, 98 or 98.5 million tons, and USDA chose to ignore that for now. And so I feel like that the weather has created enough uncertainty that those numbers are high, And I think, secondly, if you want to talk about the potential for higher acres, that's fine. But if you're going to automatically assume that that production is going to go higher because of those higher acreage numbers, and the market is indeed, I think, pricing that in now, you've got a discount in the market set up instead of a premium as Argentina goes into their major weather time period. I mean, I think this is where maybe, just maybe, the trade will realize that we're only 2 million tons from last year's ending stocks for soybeans and oil seeds as a whole. Keep in mind, the big reason why China is buying so much more beans and importing so much more beans is because their rape seed supplies are been hit by drought last year, and other oil seeds from India are much more expensive as well. So soybeans are garnering more of a percent of the export market. So these things, I don't think the trade's factoring in. Instead, I really think the trade's probably looking more at crude oil and looking more at the dollar. It may be less than after the report, but certainly still looking at those two things a lot.
Hey, speaking of acreage, Ellen Dearden, the winter wheat seedings lacked a couple of million acres this time around. What impact will that have?
Well, it was certainly a stunner to see almost 3 million acres less than what the trade was looking for, about 2 million of that in the hard red winter wheat belt. Kansas-Nebraska acreage, I think it says that we've got to expect to see some weather rallies, up and down action off weather, but also I think it says that we could see additional seedings of corn, particularly in Nebraska, where they had phenomenal yields this year, even in the dry land crop, and probably also in the northern part of Kansas, but maybe Mike could address that as well. But I think, you know, we keep waiting for wheat to be the leader, and after the report, certainly we had one strong up day, and since then, we've gone down.
I'll wait for Mike for just a second. Bill, you want to take a stab at the acreage one? I know you guys have a pretty wide network when you're talking to folks.
Yeah, I guess that was definitely a surprise, especially from the standpoint of some of those areas where we thought we might see some wheat acres that had been corn acres in the past, you know, just from a financial situation in the West, in Kansas especially. I don't know. It's kind of a little bit hard of a pill to swallow, to be quite honest with you. I think we may probably, we're looking at it that that's probably the lowest acreage number we're going to see on wheat, and things may change as we move forward. But, you know, that's the number they came out with, and I was, like Ellen, I was a little surprised that it didn't spark the market a little bit more. I'd also just like to maybe follow up, if you're going to Mike here anyhow. Some of the things you were talking about with going into critical weather in Argentina, I think is an excellent point. Do you think that's why China's been a little bit more aggressive here, maybe buying beans than people expected?
Yeah, I do think that, and I also think because they're a little bit more concerned about Brazil because of the Brazilian financial situation, you bet.
And Mike, your thought on acreage for winter wheat and then the impact it may or may not have on the prospective plantings report at the end of the month of March?
I don't think the trade was expecting that because the potential for the planting was pretty doggone good across the wheat belt, and that was the true shock. Now, one thing that I will say about the soft red wheat, this report with the seedings of hard red wheat brings into the issue, will we have lower harvested acres for soft red wheat because of the holiday flooding we saw all throughout Missouri and all the way into western Illinois, especially near St. Louis. And so I think the trade, like Ellen's talking about, the trade's going to be, I think, a lot more nervous. But, Todd, we didn't see that follow-through rally in the wheat, and I really do attribute that to another leg down in the crude oil market and a firming basis or a firming price action and trend in the dollar. And so I think the trade is probably looking at, still worried about the crude oil going to $10. And I've heard that a lot on the road. I'm actually in that epicenter of that poor basis area Ellen was talking about. I'm in western Ohio, right near the Indiana border. And these guys are in shock over here. The prices are this low with the kind of yield that they saw. And like Ellen said, basis is their salvation. But many questions about crude oil and whether it's going to go to $10. These guys get it, that it's more the outside market factors than it is the supply-demand that's really been pummeling them since harvest.
Yeah, crude oil dropped into the upper 20s earlier in the week, staying around $30 at this point. It's very low priced. And then, of course, we have, as Mike mentioned, Ellen, and you wanted to talk about, under the broken record category, a really strong dollar as well. And that's wreaking havoc on our ability to export into the global marketplace.
Seems to me that once this strong dollar situation really impacts manufacturing more than just ag exports, but manufacturing exports really get hurt too. The Fed may notice a little bit and try to keep the dollar under this $99 area. It seems to me that right now, technically speaking, we have a little double top, that November high and the spring high. And, you know, technicians always talk about double tops don't hold. But I think the Fed's going to be under the gun not to have rate hikes three or four times during this calendar year.
Is that part and parcel of the electoral process, or they're just under the gun from business sectors?
I think the business sector will put enough pressure on that it will be a political hot button, yes.
Hey, Bill Mayer, you said you wanted to talk about the tight margins for 2016 and what farmers maybe need to think about at this point, and we can probably go around the horn with everybody on this one.
Well, I guess obviously we don't need to dwell on, cost versus revenue potential, but I guess when I look and starting to put stuff together for our meetings that we have coming up, I mean, there are some positives out there. There are some potential surprises out there. You had your weather guy on there a week or so ago, and that was, there's definitely some things with the El Nino. I guess my feeling is that the real key to marketing this year as you move forward is to be ready whenever you get those opportunities, because I don't think you're going to get more than one or two opportunities probably. And how are you going to handle it? I think you really have to be aggressive on getting sales made, getting prices locked in. And you probably can't wait till that happens for your decision-making process to take place. In other words, what would make you comfortable getting half of your crop sold if we got to 4.25 on the December 16 futures? You need to ask yourself that question and get that in place now. If it's a, out of the money call option or some kind of a, option strategy or just, straight cash sales, whatever that point may be, I think you have to be ready to say, what am I going to do when this happens? Because at the time that we see that occur, if we do see that occur, there's going to be something going on. We're going to see, hot, dry weather in June, or it's going to be late planting, or, something's happened that make the market rally to that point, and it'll be difficult to make those sales unless you've thought it through this time of the year when you have time to do that.
Ellen, on that note, how do you get yourself into that position where you can handle financially the ability to make those kinds of cash sales?
I think it's a mental game as much as anything. And having price orders in, having orders in that you don't cancel if we get close to them because you're worried about whatever, I think that'll be a big key. I also think you have to keep looking at where your cash flow needs lie and make sales that line up with cash flow needs if you're strictly in the cash market itself.
Mike, you have any words of wisdom in this area?
I don't know if they're wisdom, but just two quick points. I think the traders and the producers are in a very similar mindset right now, Todd, that if we're going to get a rally in the corn and beans, especially heading into February, it's going to be spawned or needed to be addressed first in the crude oil market and then followed up in the bean market. And so technically speaking, around that $34 a barrel level in lead month crude and $9.10 level in lead month beans, I think opens up the door technically to where we can have a decent crude and bean-led rally. March corn was trading around 385 a year ago today. Why aren't we trading there with only about 71 million bushels difference in carryover? I think it's mainly due to the crude and mainly due to the wheat. But if the crude rallies and the beans rally, that can be mitigated. The other thing I'll just throw out that I'm picking up here in these meetings is that producers, I think both on the phone and in these meetings, are holding pat with their rotation until we see what the Fed-based price ends up being. But financing is becoming a bigger and bigger talking point on the sidelines of these meetings. Everybody's very quiet during the meetings, but on the sidelines, I'm hearing more and more issues where corn seed, chemical, fertilizer financing could make a substantial difference in this crop planted acreage for 2016. One of your colleagues, Ty Higgins from Ohio AgNet, joined me today in Van Wert, Ohio, and he had just come out of a meeting and doing an interview with some people in the know, so to speak. And some people are putting the acreage switched from corn to beans at 5 to 7%. Some are putting it all the way up at 20 to 30%. If we don't see some kind of improvement in these prices for the February base price for crop insurance.
Yeah, so that would be in Ohio, and that would be substantially higher probably than the rest of the nation, because they generally would side dress anhydrous or nitrogen on at some point. In fact, anhydrous ammonia fall application, not really well known in a large part of the growing regions of Ohio, if I remember correctly. The rest of the nation, not so easy, I think, Mike, to change, unless it out where you live in Atchison, if it gets easier to change from corn to soybean acres.
No, you're exactly right, and that's where the producers are getting to a point where they're wondering, do I have to bring in my agronomist, my seed guy, my crop insurance guy? Who do I need to bring in to the lender to educate them, to make them understand that if I break rotation with some of these fertilizers or chemicals, I should say, and fertilizer like fall applied nitrogen already in the ground, it's just not going to work. It may look better on paper, but it's just not going to work, practically speaking. And, you know, my hope, and I think after this week's report, and like Ellen was talking about the dollar technicals, I feel exactly as she does. Maybe we just get to a point where we can get that short covering rally that takes the pressure off of us. Maybe not a major low in the market, but a nice short covering rally that takes the pressure off of us, and we can dodge a bullet here.
Would everybody be in agreement, and Mike kind of said this was the case, I'm pretty sure he would think this, that the very low price of crude oil is one of the largest problems for the commodity marketplace at this point?
I would agree with that, and I think it's probably weighing on, you know, the entire outlook from a, you know, U.S. economy standpoint, although I'm not sure I buy that. It looks to me like low oil prices, low gasoline prices really are pretty positive for the economy. But I think we're at a very critical weekly close here on the crude tomorrow.
All right, so where do we need to close, do you think?
I think we need to close above this $31 number, I believe it is. Todd, I don't have it here right here in front of me.
Right, so that we should try to put a low in maybe this week and begin to rally out of that. It'll be interesting to watch, and I think, Mike, you're telling me that's exactly what you're wanting to watch, too, is that you need the crude oil to rally in order for soybeans to go?
Yeah, I mean, with the report, with wheat still in our way, minus the wheat seedings report giving us a bullish look, the soybeans are now a supportive feature. It really boils down to that crude and the spreading between the crude and the dollar. Yeah.
And Ellen Dearden, I think I'll start with you with a final thought for the afternoon.
Technically, we have given buy signals in the beans. When March beans closed above the 100-day moving average at 881.25 on Thursday, and I think that looks rather well. I'd like to see the meal show some buy signals, too, before we could head another 30 cents higher in beans.
Can I ask one quick question as a follow-up? Can meal do that, given the amount of bean oil we think we'll have to have for the energy supply?
We're going to have to wait and see. 285 is kind of an upside breakout in the March, which is now the nearby meal.
Mike Zuzel, your final thought?
I would just keep it very short and remind everybody to take a look at their break-even starting now and start planning with, if we do get a short covering rally, what you on your individual farm need. Like I said, 385 March corn, would seem a logical first step for me to see as a target, because that's where we were last year with relatively the same U.S. ending stocks. And global corn ending stocks are not that bad off either. We're less than 2 million tons higher in 15-16 than we were in 14-15 with about the same stocks to use ratio.
And a final word from you, Bill Mayer.
I think we're still in kind of the same position we've been in for a while. We have the farmer with the long in the corn and the soybeans, and the funds manage money with the short. And as we get rallies, if we can see something to spark the some short covering, I believe it'll get sold. So I think we don't get too disappointed if you see some real choppiness here, where you move up a little bit and then, you know, back off. I think that's more likely than just any kind of a straight move up for any time in the near future.
You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. You may find our programming online at WILLAG.org. Our panelists today have included Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, and Mike Zuzlo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.